Hi, I'm Shashamizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, we have all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you. We'll hear brand new music from Burial and a collaboration between Talking Heads singer David Byrne and Yola Tengo. Plus, we'll hear the WGXC Congressional Report, all about what Representatives Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko have been up to lately. And Colleen Pearson will also talk about the pollution going on at the Dunn Landfill in Rensselaer County. All this and more after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Controlled. On air, in air. Channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. Stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. The Troy Record reports that on January 9th, Albany County announced another record number of new COVID-19 cases, similar to what is going on throughout the Hudson Valley. Officials in Albany County reported 1,448 new cases on January 9th. Albany County's most recent 7-day average of cases per 100,000 is up to 211.8, and the Capital Region's average of cases per 100,000 is now up to 219.9, with 6,644 active cases right now in Albany County. There were 19 new hospitalizations for coronavirus in Albany County announced January 9th, and 116 county residents currently hospitalized with COVID-19, and 14 of those in the hospital are in ICUs. Quote, we knew we would see increased positive cases after holiday gatherings, and that is what is happening now with another record high today of over 1,400 new cases, unquote. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said on January 9th, quote, I hope that people have listened to what we have said about getting vaccinated and getting tested if they show signs of symptoms of the virus. There are many places to get a vaccination and local mass testing sites now at Crossgates Mall and SUNY Albany to be tested. Please do the right thing to stop the spread and protect yourself, your loved ones, and our community, unquote. Only 72% of Albany County residents have been fully vaccinated. Read more about the story in the Troy Record.
Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that a video shows Catskill police officers ran and hid instead of helping 29-year-old Jason Jones after they tasered him and he burst into flames. Jones later died after an extended stay in the burn unit of a Syracuse hospital. The video shows two Catskill police officers running out of their station lobby after he burst into flames, and another who, instead of helping, stood, and I quote, around the corner of an interior wall rather than rush to the aid of the man who was burning in front of him, end quote. Instead of the police helping the man who needed medical attention, a civilian who witnessed the scene through a window can be seen on the video entering the station and trying to console Jones by hugging him. Jones was a well-known athlete at Catskill High School a decade ago, and just after midnight, October 31st, he walked into the Village of Catskill Police Station on Main Street and doused himself with hand sanitizer. The video does not show Jones attacking police, but one of the officers fires a taser at him and his head catches fire immediately. Then, just as quick, the three officers disappear from the video. Kevin A. Lubrand, an attorney representing Jones's family, said in response to the release of the video, and I quote, Jason was unarmed in the police station and not threatening anyone when the police hit him with 50,000 volts of electrical current and he ignited. Instead of helping Jason, the police ran out of the room, shut the door, and let him burn, end quote. The Times Union quotes an anonymous police official who is not involved in the case, said that his officers are trained to never use a taser on an individual who may have been recently exposed to a flammable liquid, including hand sanitizer, which contains alcohol. He also said officers should have helped the man immediately. The official said, and I quote, once the threat had been stopped, you don't just say, I'm going to let that person burn, end quote. The State Attorney General's Office of Special Investigation has taken over the case from Greene County District Attorney Joseph Stanzoni because of a 2015 executive order empowering the Attorney General to investigate fatal encounters between police and unarmed civilians. Jones died last month after spending 48 days on a ventilator in an intensive care unit at Upstate University Hospital in Syracuse. The investigation is continuing, and the Attorney General's office said in a statement, and I quote, the release of this footage is not an expression of any opinion as to the guilt or innocence of any party in a criminal matter or any opinion as to how or whether any individual may be charged with a crime, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson is reporting for the Times Union that the Catskill Strategic Advisory Group is recommending a pilot reservation system for some trailhead parking lots. The group released its interim report January 6, recommending different ways to ease congestion on trails, roadways, and parking lots, and to educate visitors about safety and respecting the outdoors. The group was formed in October 2020 by the Department of Environmental Conservation after pandemic closures pushed an unprecedented number of visitors to the Catskills, especially to areas in the Catterskill Clove. The biggest increase in visitors was at the Clove, and even though the pandemic inflated numbers decreased in 2021, they remained high. Most of the recommendations in the report are tentative, including the suggestion of instituting a reservation system, but the report recommends immediate action in the Clove area. The recommended actions involve installing technology to track the capacity of parking lots and establish a social media group to disseminate the information, placing informational message boards along Route 23A, installing wayfinding and interpretive signage along trails, and creating an informational Catterskill Clove website. The report also recommends the pilot reservation system, but does not identify where it should be implemented. Next year in Catterskill Clove, hikers will be able to take a shuttle up and down Route 23A and to the nearby North-South Lake. The service was created by businessperson Ryan Chadwick, and the town of Tannersville is using some of the money it received from a $10 million state downtown revitalization initiative grant to construct stops for the service. Visitors would park in the village to access the shuttle amongst the village's restaurants and shops, according to Chadwick. The shuttles would travel down the Clove, stopping at Haines Falls, Cotterskill Falls, North-South Lake, the Fawns Leap Swimming Hole, and other locations before reaching Palinville and turning back, according to Chadwick's plan. Two shuttles would run the route, with one available every half hour. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
On January 4th, Hunter Tannersville Schools announced that so many staff had called in sick with COVID-19 that school was going virtual all week. On January 6th, Catskill Schools made similar announcements, staying closed through the MLK holiday next week. In Dutchess County, the Dover School District, the Millbrook District, Pauling Elementary School, and the Arlington District were also closed at least some of the past week because of staff shortages from coronavirus. Nick Reisman at New York State of Politics reports that on January 6th, the association that represents state Supreme Court justices in New York said it wants court proceedings to go virtual again because of the sharp rise in COVID-19 cases this month. Queens State Supreme Court Justice Carmen Velasquez, the president of the Association of Supreme Court Justices, said, and I quote, "I am fully vaccinated and am quarantining at home with symptoms. I am extremely concerned about the health of our justices and court employees and the health of those who come into our courthouses. That must be our paramount consideration," end quote. Most local counties are now reporting a record number of new COVID-19 cases, with rising hospitalizations and deaths. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Melanie Lekasevic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media that Queemans Town Board member Daniel Baker has been appointed deputy town supervisor in the southern Albany County town. The town has operated without a deputy supervisor for 2 years during the first administration of town supervisor George McHugh. Quote, "This is something new," unquote, McHugh said at the board's recent reorganizational meeting. Quote, "I didn't do this the past 2 years," unquote. McHugh said it was time to fill the position again. Quote, "When I first came back into the office in January of 2020, I didn't appoint a deputy town supervisor because I didn't really know much about the board members at the time or who I would put in that position if I in fact needed one," unquote, McHugh said. As deputy supervisor, Baker can fulfill the duties of supervisor in McHugh's absence. Circumstances convinced McHugh the deputy's position was needed now. Quote, "Now that we have COVID and it's ramping up even worse than it ever has been, there is no telling what might happen to the supervisor," unquote, he said. Quote, "So I think it would be negligent on my part as a supervisor not to have a succession plan in place if, God forbid, I come down with COVID or something happens where I'm out of the office and I'm the only one who can sign checks or run the day-to-day operations," unquote. The town board unanimously approved Baker's appointment. Read more about the story in the Ravenna News Herald.
David Robinson reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that on January 7th, Governor Kathy Hochul mandated a COVID-19 booster shot for healthcare workers in the state because of the rising numbers of vaccine breakthrough infections caused by the Omicron variant. A state health department panel must approve the mandate on January 11th. If they do, Hochul said, workers at hospitals, nursing homes, and other healthcare settings need to get the booster shot within 2 weeks of becoming eligible. New York implemented one of the nation's first vaccine mandates for healthcare workers on September 27th. Hochul said, and I quote, "We're asking them to do the right thing once more," end quote. The state hospitals are struggling with nearly 11,600 hospitalizations January 6th from COVID-19. As of January 4th, 22% of the 94,000 direct care workers in New York nursing homes have gotten a booster shot, while 35% of fully vaccinated Americans have taken a booster shot. And you can read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
And Mid-Hudson News is reporting Power Utility Central Hudson Gas and Electric is offering a $5,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and prosecution of the people who broke into substations located in Madison and Dutchess counties, stole copper wiring, and caused significant damage to equipment in the facilities. Company Vice President of Electric Engineering and Operations Ryan Hawthorne said their, quote, "primary concern in preventing the theft of copper and metals is to protect our employees and the public and maintain the safety of our facilities," unquote. He said the trespassers at the Smithfield, Hibernia, and Stanfordville substations put themselves in harm's way by cutting out copper ground wire that resulted in significant equipment failure. Removal of the wires could cause serious injury or death to thieves as well as utility workers and others who may later approach the facility, Sawthorne said. Anyone with information about the thefts are asked to call the state police at 845-677-7300 or the Central Hudson Theft of Services hotline at 877-728-3465. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
The National Weather Service in Albany has issued a wind chill advisory through Tuesday at 3 p.m., as is expected to be the first major cold front of the winter in our area. Monday, the forecast is for partly sunny skies with a high of just 15 and wind chill values as low as negative 3 during the day. Monday night, isolated snow showers are possible. There's a 20% chance. Mostly cloudy skies, a low around negative 3, and wind chill values as low as negative 23. Tuesday should be mostly sunny and very, very cold, with a high near 5, and wind chill values as low as negative 24. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, with a low around negative 1 is the forecast, and Wednesday should be partly sunny, with a high near 25. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Monday, January 10th on 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m., it's time to get on the Afrosonic Taxi. Today, hearing tracks from Miriam Hassan, Bombino, Nahawa Dumbia, and others. Then at 11 a.m., Brendan Donegan is playing favorites with David Bowie, live from the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson in the basement on Warren Street at 11 a.m. Then at noon, after the local news, it's time for the Deep Three shows with tracks from Martin Espada, Ivo Malek, and Johan Johansson, among others. There's brand new music at 2 p.m. from on the Vital Weekly show with new works from Ava Mendoza, Wendy Eisenberg, Laurie Hiranin, and others. At 4 p.m., we head to Housatonic, where Kieran Riley hosts the Monday version of the WGXC afternoon show. Martin Garbus is the lawyer featured tonight at 7 p.m. on the Law and Disorder show. And then in the evening, we premiere two new shows on the radio at WGXC, the Banta Nuts radio show that mixes contemporary R&B and pop with more experimental sounds. And tonight we'll hear tracks from Akon, Saweetie, and Calligraph Jones, among others. Then at 10 p.m., the more experimental Driftless Turmoil show is on, with music from Lightning Bolt, Dan Melchior, Matt Sweeney, and others on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Catskill High School Interact Club has scheduled its Martin Luther King March for Peace and Justice for February 17th. The event meets at the Second Baptist Church in Catskill at 5 p.m., and a candlelight march starts at 5:15 p.m. The group will march from the Second Baptist Church, that's at Upper Main Street on Catskill, to the Greene County Courthouse, to the Catskill Middle School lawn. That is, again, the Martin Luther King March for Peace and Justice, February 17th, organized by the Catskill High School Interact Club. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about this event and many other community events in your area.
Aloha out there in Radio Land. Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues. The show is a monthly roundup of new music plumbing psych, folk, cosmic Americana, indie, garage, and exploratory titles alongside enough classic gems to hold it all together like glue. You can tune into the show every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, January 10th. All right, hope everybody made it through the weekend safe and sound. It was pretty icy out there. We are currently 2.1% of the way through the year. We got 69 days left until spring. Early morning temperatures range from 15 degrees in Halcott Center to 25 degrees in Lamontville. We have some lake effect snow blowing through the region. Snow squalls are possible at any given point during the day. A high of 26 is expected at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures drop to 6 degrees. Some people are going to have to leave those taps running overnight. Tomorrow looks mostly dry with some possible lake effect snow. A high of only 14 is expected at 3 p.m. Another 6-degree night takes us into a dry but windy Wednesday with a high of 33. Thursday is also looking dry with a high of 37. Ice fishing could be possible this week. It takes about 4 sub-freezing days to create any sort of safe level of ice to walk on. And by Wednesday, we will have just that. Remember that cold water can kill you quickly. It's 4 inches minimum for safe walking or skating conditions. Test with a cordless drill if you have to. And just plain stay off of creeks and moving water. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 3:18 a.m., then high tide at 9:16 a.m., low tide again at 4 p.m., high tide again at 9:31 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 32 degrees. It finally bottomed out and we can't go any lower. Sunset today will be at 4:28 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:18 a.m. Looking way up, we see a coronal mass ejection was just thrown from the far side of the sun with a big explosion behind it. That tumultuous region could turn towards us later this week. Solar flares could be possible. Solar wind speed is currently 453 kilometers per second at 4.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible for daytime and fair below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 36. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter W. Bone of Gilboa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
2 weeks, 14 days, 326 hours. Every second that your family could be exposed to radiation after a nuclear attack. Radiation that kills.
To survive, a fallout shelter is a necessity. Equipment and supplies are essential.
Now, Survive All Shelters, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, offers a basic equipment kit with
a Conelrad high-powered radio, transistor-operated for long battery life,
a complete, fully stocked first aid kit,
a heavy-duty fire extinguisher, emergency water containers, a chemical toilet for protection against contamination and disease,
extra-strength Saran and rayon bunks,
a radiation meter and individual dosimeters.
For protection every second of each hour of every day, see a survive-all shelter now.
Bye. Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have flu vaccines, and flu kills, I believe, hundreds of thousands of people every year. OSHA's never purported to regulate on that basis.
Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch and other conservatives on the court appear skeptical about OSHA's COVID vaccine or testing requirement for large businesses. It takes effect today, but it could be blocked. During arguments on Friday, Justice Elena Kagan and other liberals seemed overwhelmingly supportive.
The agency has done everything but stand on its head to show quite clearly that no other policy will prevent sickness and death to anywhere like the degree this one will.
The court is also considering a mandate for healthcare workers at facilities with Medicare and Medicaid funding. Meanwhile, Justice Sonia Sotomayor came under fire for suggesting that nearly 100,000 children in the U.S. are hospitalized from COVID-19. On Sunday, the head of the CDC clarified the number is closer to 3,500. Russia's foreign minister is cautioning that talks between the U.S. and Moscow could quickly break down. The two countries meet today in Geneva amid tensions over Ukraine, where Russia has troops on the border. But analysts say Russia sending forces to stop unrest in Kazakhstan makes a Ukraine invasion less likely. President Joe Biden joined key Democrats at a Saturday memorial service for former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Former President Barack Obama remembered his colleague.
The Senate and the country benefited from your extraordinary leadership, and I could not have asked for a better, truer friend.
Reid died at age 82 on December 28th. His body will lie in state tomorrow at the Capitol Rotunda. In Senate election news, Wisconsin Republican Ron Johnson and Republican John Thune of South Dakota are both seeking re-election. Johnson is breaking a promise to limit himself to 2 terms. 20 Senate seats held by Republicans and 14 by Democrats are up this fall. Tens of thousands of migrants are now arriving at the southern U.S. border each week, and crossings by unaccompanied children are up sharply. So far in January, the Border Patrol has rescued 50 migrants from an Arizona canal and a locked trailer in Texas. An agency spokesperson says cartels are leaving migrants in hazardous situations at alarming rates. Former Congresswoman and refugee advocate Marjorie Margolis says there's growing frustration.
Some of the Border Patrol just don't know exactly what their job is. And frankly, if I were a member of Congress, I would be asking, what the heck is going on?
Some immigration advocates are critical of the continued use of a Trump-era public health order that is blocking asylum seekers and the court-ordered reinstatement of the Remain in Mexico policy. Margolis emphasizes that the U.S. continues to be a nation of immigrants.
The next generation of folks who come into this country make our heads spin, and we should be so proud of that.
Cole Hemstreet, Contributive Reporting. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is WGXC's Congressional Report, tracking the votes, words, and actions of Representative Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck representing the 19th Congressional District, and Paul Tonko, a Democrat from Amsterdam from the 20th Congressional District.
The website 538.com reports that both Representatives Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko vote with President Joe Biden 100% of the time. Go to 538.com for more information. This week, all the local congressional news was about January 6th, the anniversary of an attempted coup by supporters of President Donald Trump, who attempted to overturn election results that were fair and free, and their attempt to alter the Electoral College vote count in Congress that day. This week, WGXC had several stories on the issue.
Chris McKenna from the Times Herald Record reports about where charges stand against 13 Capitol riot suspects from Hudson Valley. Authorities know at least 13 people from the Hudson Valley who were part of a violent attempt to overthrow the U.S. government on January 6, 2021. They include a retired cop turned landscaper from Goshen, a Newburgh tattoo artist, and a Metro North rail yard worker. Only one of the 13 is currently behind bars, while two have pleaded guilty and have yet to be sentenced. 3 plan to stand trial, and 8 other defendants are awaiting plea deals or trial. Edward Lang, a 26-year-old from Newburgh, was arrested after boasting about his participation on social media. He can be seen in photos swinging an aluminum baseball bat at police, and charges against him include assaulting an officer with a dangerous weapon and inflicting bodily injury. He is in a Washington, D.C. jail in September, spoke by phone from jail last week with the ultra-conservative Newsmax TV channel, claiming he acted in, and I quote, self-defense, end quote, against police officers who were, and I quote, brutalizing protesters who were unarmed, just loving American citizens who were there to use their First Amendment, end quote. Anyone who has seen video knows police officers were defending the U.S. Capitol and democracy as the mob successfully delayed the electoral count that day. Court papers opposing his release last month said Lange, and I quote, has not articulated how he was defending others from immediate danger by shoving a door into the head of a vulnerable sergeant or repeatedly kicking a detective after he fell to the ground or using a baseball bat to beat officers standing sentry, end quote. Others arrested include Robert Minuta, who is the owner of a tattoo shop on Broadway in Newburgh, and is a member of the right-wing Oath Keepers militia. He unwittingly discussed his involvement to an off-duty FBI agent who came to his shop for a tattoo. Dutchess County resident William Vogel, 27, faces four charges, two misdemeanors and two lower-level offenses, is due back in court on March 4th. The story details the case status of each of the 13 Hudson Valley men charged in the riot. And you can read more in the Times Herald Record. Mid-Hudson News is reporting nearly 1 year after protesters stormed the U.S. Capitol and disrupted the certification of the 2020 presidential election, many Americans support the investigation into the incident, according to an NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll. More than 6 in 10 Americans, or 62%, think the investigation is appropriate and do not view it as an unwarranted campaign aimed at Donald Trump and his supporters, while 35% do not agree with the inquiry. 49% consider the events of January 6th to be an insurrection and a threat to U.S. democracy. 25% believe it was a political protest protected under the First Amendment, while 19% say the incident was unfortunate but does not have implications for the future. The director of Marist College Institute for Public Opinion in Poughkeepsie said, and I quote, both Democrats and Republicans believe that U.S. democracy is under threat, but they overwhelmingly disagree over the meaning of the events of January 6th and the motivation behind the investigation into the events of that day, end quote. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Mike Guisdala reports in the Troy Record, Representative Paul Tonko's memories of an armed attempt to overthrow the U.S. government 1 year later. On January 6th last year, an armed mob directed there by former President Donald Trump delayed the counting of electoral votes. The U.S. Capitol was ransacked for the first time since the War of 1812. A police officer was beaten, a rioter was shot, and three others died during the rampage. Tonko described what he saw. He said, and I quote, one of my colleagues was with my staffer, Kate. She had just had knee surgery. Another colleague was flat out on the floor, hyperventilating. People were really stressed as they were trying to figure out how quickly can we get to that exit door. Then realizing that you had to go down several sets of stairs to make your way to the tunnel that connects the Rayburn office building to the House chamber to the Capitol building. It was all of that happening with great intensity and a lack of direction, basically because it was an unusual set of circumstances, end quote. In the long interview, the congressperson who represents Albany County does not mention holding the coup plotters or rioters accountable. Tonko said, and I quote, as we approach the first anniversary of the attack on the Capitol, it is important for us to believe to come forward in a united way that enables us to put first the country, to make certain that we all work together toward a common goal, to make certain that our democracy, our republic that was challenged in a very powerful and forceful way that produced death and destruction and the attempt to undo a process, all of those dynamics need to be addressed, and I think that as we go forward, I would hope that we could do this out of love of country, respect for country, and a sense to make us an even stronger voice for freedom and opportunity, end quote. Read more about this story in the Troy Record.
This week, WGXC had listened back to Paul Tonko, the interview he gave in the days after the January 6th insurrection with WOOC about his reactions.
We were then told to drop down because they were concerned they were going to break through on the second floor. They were beginning to shoot, you know, there were shots fired into the chamber, which was very threatening, all while you heard growing noise and pounding on those doors upstairs to enter in. And all you could think of is if they break through, mass chaos will happen.
This week, the Daily Freeman also reported on Representative Antonio Delgado's reflections on the January 6th insurrection 1 year later. He said, quote, 1 year ago, the peaceful transfer of power to a legitimately elected president came under siege as violence and malice tore through the hallowed halls of the Capitol. More than 100 police officers were injured in the line of duty that day. Five officers died in the days, weeks, and months that followed, unquote, said Delgado. Quote, their bravery saved the lives of countless individuals trapped in the Capitol. He also said, quote, let us never forget the many acts of valor and bravery that made it possible for our government to resume its work and fulfill what our Constitution obligates. This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking this week's activities from Representative Paul Tonko and Representative Antonio Delgado, who both represent in Congress many of the citizens in the WGXC listening area. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories.
Here is 2022 new music from David Byrne of Talking Heads and the band Yola Tengo. This is Who Has Seen the Wind?
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined today by Colleen Pearson, who's an attorney with the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition, And she recently made a presentation to the Rensselaer County legislature with regard to requests that they have made to the county health department to investigate the situation with the Dunn construction and debris landfill in the city of Rensselaer, which has been quite controversial since it's opened. So Colleen, thank you for joining us. And what was the crux of your presentation to the county legislature?
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I went before the county legislature on January 5th to make them aware of the fact that I recently submitted a letter to the Rensselaer County Public Health Director calling on her to investigate the Dunn landfill. Per the New York State public health law, the public health director is required to investigate complaints concerning nuisances or causes of danger or injury to life and health within her health district. And so I wanted to make it known to the county legislature that they have the ability to investigate this landfill. They have not done so since it has come to be, and that they have the ability to look into this further and that their hands are not tied.
Did you get any response either from the county health department or the county legislature?
I have not received a letter in response to my letter, which I sent to the Rensselaer County Public Health Director on December 15th of 2021. I received some feedback from county legislators last night voicing their approval of what the Environmental Coalition is doing. I think there's a consensus, a bipartisan consensus, that this landfill needs to be looked at much closer. Something needs to be done to mitigate the negative health impacts that it's causing, and maybe even be shut down.
Now, Mike Stamm, I believe, is the mayor of the city of Rensselaer, but until recently he was the chair of the Rensselaer County Legislature, and I believe he's been pretty outspoken about concerns with the Dunn landfill. Is he going to be able to help you at all trying to convince the county to, you know, investigate?
Well, the city, they can voice their opposition to it. He has been complying with us. He seems, you know, to be very against the landfill as well, and has been assisting us in any information that we may need to go further with opposing this landfill. And I think that the town of East Greenbush has been very outspoken with the fact that they are not for this landfill, because the town of East Greenbush residents are also being affected by this. It's not just a city of Rensselaer issue.
And what were some of the nuisance and other, you know, complaints that you have brought to the attention of the public health director?
Well, actually, along with the letter that I submitted to her, we attached a petition signed by 150 residents of the community who want to take action to resolve this situation and are calling for her to do an investigation. And most notably is the fact that this landfill is a stone's throw away from the school in the city of Rensselaer that houses all from pre-K all the way up to high school. And so we talked about Dr. David Carpenter, a public health physician from the SUNY School of Public Health, has testified before the town of East Greenbush about the effects that this will have just on the students who go to school there. They are the most vulnerable in our population. And the fact is that the air around the school is likely to contain asbestos and lead. The other fact is that the dust is blowing into the windows of the school such that the teachers have to close the windows. And the dust contains ultra fine particulates that can do severe damage to these children who are sitting in the classroom. And the fact is that COVID is already a risk for these children every day going to school. And on top of that, in the community of Rensselaer, they now have to deal with this dust and neurotoxins coming in through their windows because of this landfill. So I addressed that in the letter to her. And then I also talked about the fact that there's so much truck traffic leading up to the landfill. These are huge trucks coming into a city that the roads are small. They're the infrastructure is old, and they come in and there's diesel fuels from the trucks running up the hills, because this is a hill that goes up to the landfill, and they're dealing with the odor, the noise from that. And it's really not only a threat to their physical health, but their mental health, living with that every single day.
Now, there's been a lot of questions raised why, DEC ever even granted this permit, since this facility is located right next door, to a school. But I do understand DEC is in the permit renewal process. What is DEC doing? And have there been any, significant developments with the DEC permit issue?
Well, yes. So DEC is not treating this application for renewal as a renewal permit. They're treating it as a new application. And what that means is that there will be an enhanced review process when or if Dunn files their application. And that enhanced review process gives the public the ability to comment this time around before the permit can be renewed or granted. And part of the reason for DEC doing that is the fact that some areas directly around the landfill have now been designated as potential, not potential, they have been now designated as environmental justice zones, due in part to the percentage of people living below the poverty level, and in some of them due to the minority status of the residents. So with this development with the environmental justice zones, DEC is now taking a harder look at this application this time around, which is a very good thing for the community. They can really voice their opposition, what they've been experiencing due to this landfill, which looks very different than the landfill that was approved back in the beginning.
Has the county legislature itself actually gone on record, with respect to the landfill? And then, more recently, would they pass a resolution and write a letter in support of having the public health director do this investigation?
Well, the county legislature has come out with a resolution voicing their opposition to the landfill. I have not heard anything as to whether they are going to speak with the public health director and urge her to do this investigation. But two things: a resolution voicing opposition to a landfill does not do anything except maybe help political optics. It maybe shows the landfill that they're not wanted in the community. But the legislature needs to put their money where their mouth is and aid this investigation if they're really in opposition to it. Secondly, the county public health director does not really have a choice here. The public health law in New York State is clear. If they receive a complaint from the inhabitants of their jurisdiction in their public health district, they are required to investigate it. So we are waiting to hear what they say, but they must take this complaint seriously and look into it. If they find nothing, sure, but we really find that it would be hard pressed to say they wouldn't find anything if they investigate this.
So if people want more information about the Dunn landfill, read the complaint, or, to voice concerns to DEC or the county public health director, how can they, sort of find, that information? And what, do you hope that residents will be doing at this point?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because the DEC has urged residents to call a hotline if they want to report any complaints about the landfill. The fact of the matter is that that hotline is run by the Dunn landfill. So if you call the hotline to complain about Dunn, Dunn answers the phone, and DEC trusts that they're going to relay those complaints accurately and fully to DEC. It's a huge conflict of interest. And the fact of the matter is that if they want to properly submit a complaint to DEC, they can go to DEC's website, and they have a form for reporting potential environmental violations. And that is where people should be submitting their complaints. Secondly, if they need any help with, submitting public comment, or they want more resources, they can look up the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition as a Facebook page. They have a big online presence, and they can certainly ask for any help that they need in this battle against the landfill.
Well, we want to thank Colleen Pearson with the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition for joining us today to talk about the Dunn landfill. And this is Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Here is
New music released in 2022 from the Anti-Dawn EP. This is Burial, and the track is called Strange Neighborhood.
Came around my way, yeah. Thank you.